Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Sorry for that delay. We have some technical difficulties over here at Inside the Octagon, but thank you guys for tuning in for another episode. I'm your host, Lanny Lua, along with my co-host, Leo Shower. Leo, what's up, my man?
What's going on? What's going on? Welcome to the blessed era, my friends.
It is the blessed era indeed. Hawaii, the 808, went to Brazil and represented in a fashionable way, holding it down at UFC 212. We'll get into that just shortly, but this is Inside the Octagon, which you guys can listen to weekly Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This show is brought to you by the Sports Grid Podcast, which you guys can tune into Thursdays between 6 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And as you stated, my friend, I'll let you kick it off. We are now in the blessed era. What are your thoughts on that?
Man, Max Holloway is looking more and more amazing each time we see him. What he did to Jose Aldo, we've never seen before. I mean, we saw Jose Aldo get knocked out in 13 seconds. You know, anybody can get caught like that. But what he did to Jose Aldo was just the thing of legends. I mean, he goes to another man's country against a hostile crowd, and he just picks Jose Aldo apart. I mean, Jose had his moments in the first two rounds, but Holloway looked like he was just going there to take over another King's Village, and he did just that. I mean, looked absolutely incredible.
No, you're definitely right. That's what he was calling during the week is, hey, that's what kings do. We go to someone else's land. We conquer them. We take over. And look, this was a big, big fight for both men. Holloway to show that he deserves to be among the elite, if not, you know, in the champions, and that he's the new face of the division, even though he's only 25 years old. For Aldo, it was kind of like a redemption story, even though he had beaten Frankie Edgar. But that lingering effect of the 13-second knockout to McGregor still hung over him and his legacy. This was a chance for him to further cement not only himself as the greatest featherweight of all time, but to say there's no one left for me to face besides the guy that's beaten me. I need to move up to lightweight now to do this. And look, before the end came in the third round, he looked good. He looked good out there. This wasn't, you know, like you said, 13 seconds, anybody could get caught. But it wasn't like Holloway just dominated him and Aldo looked old and slow. No, Aldo hit him with a couple combinations, rocked him a couple times, was coming forward. Well, at first started off a little aggressive, but then he kind of went back into his countering tactics. But I want to ask you this. Were you surprised that we didn't see those traditional ruthless and vicious Aldo skits that had become a thing of legend?
I did. I mean, that's been the story of the week, is why didn't Aldo use his leg kicks? And, you know, we've seen in Holloway's past fights that he is somewhat susceptible to leg kicks, and the leg kicks were there the whole time, and they were fighting at a pretty close range. The inside leg kick could have been there for Aldo the entire fight. And for whatever reason, he didn't use those. He did look good with his combinations. He looked faster than Holloway, actually, in the first couple of rounds. He was landing the left jab and the hook. But, I mean, for some reason, the leg kicks never came into play. And I kind of wonder what the fight would have been like if that would have been instituted in the fight.
No, definitely. And Holloway kind of alluded to it, saying that because reporters and analysts were saying that Holloway was a better boxer, and Aldo, as we talked about last week, has kind of mentioned that he may want to go into boxing, a la because of McGregor and Mayweather, that maybe he wanted to show that he was actually the better striker standing up, that hence why he didn't want to throw leg kicks. Because not like Holloway is Frank Yeager or Chad Mendez, and they're going to catch your low kick and go in for a double leg or a single leg. So there's that. I also heard that because Aldo has fought in wrestlers recently outside of McGregor, that he's just become used to not throwing as many leg kicks. Frankie Edgar, Mendez before McGregor. So I could kind of see that as well. But, you know, that's why you have fight camp, so that you could break whatever old habit you got and come up with a new game plan. In watching this, you know, I mentioned last week, and this isn't to pat myself on the back, although I guess I am kind of doing it. What really worked for Holloway was, it wasn't necessarily the volume of punches, but it wasn't just one big haymaker. You know, like I said, it would be his speed and his power and just the volume of punches of him just constantly throwing them. And we saw over time, Aldo started to slow down just a little bit, ended a second, going into the third. And then Holloway kind of did what the Diaz brothers did. He threw his arms up, but he kind of did what the Diaz brothers are known to do. Work you over, and then one twos. And then eventually they're going to catch you and rock you. Holloway did that. while we were watching this, I wanted to bring this up. While me and you was watching this fight at Miller L's house, you were calling for a stoppage. I want to say 15, 20, maybe even 30 seconds before it happened, somewhere beforehand. Why did you feel it needed to be stopped? Because I agree. I didn't agree with you on it. Why did you feel it should have been stopped earlier than when it was?
I mean, looking back on it, maybe it wasn't too much of a late stoppage per se. You could see that John McCarthy gave Aldo every chance that he could have, especially given that it's a championship fight, and you know, Aldo fought for, you know, a good minute and a half trying to recover guard and trying to, you know, get back up. It did look a little bit funky, you know, watching it live. I was like, you know, he's letting him take a lot of punishment, but you know, like we talked about later, I mean, it is a championship fight. You got to give Aldo as many chances as possible. So it's not really an egregious late stoppage, but you know, I wouldn't have minded seeing it stopped, you know, I mean, 10, 15 seconds earlier.
I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't have minded seeing it go on for another 10 to 15 seconds. Cause as I was telling you, when it was stopped, even though it's not an intelligent way of defending yourself, and me and you have talked about this as well, sometimes you're just in a bad position that you can't get out of within 3 to 5 seconds. And when Aldo turned to his stomach and was kind of on all fours with his hands up, Holloway wasn't landing major punches, as you said. Most of them was landing in the back of the head and should have been called for, hey, but you know, if they're standing up and it happens, hey, you know, hit him in the back of the head. But apparently when it's ground and pound, it's all fair game. I thought maybe it should have went just a little bit longer, because it reminds me of when Uriah Faber lost to Barrio, when he gave McCarthy the thumbs up, but Barrio had him in a position where he had him in side control from the back and just kept throwing punches, and Faber just couldn't get up. And see, in those situations, I'm like, I get it. It's not intelligent, but how much damage are you really taking? So I would have maybe have liked to see it just go a little bit longer. I thought Aldo, you know, even though he got rocked going knocked down, I would like to have seen it go on a little bit longer. But he did lose. It was a tough break for him. Is this the last we see of Jose Aldo at 145?
I think so. I mean, we remember Aldo being this massive featherweight fighter who was just killing himself, cutting down weight. So, I mean, he did look a little bit smaller towards you know, the last couple of fights, and he wasn't cutting as much weight, but maybe that catches up to you, you know, after, you know, 30 years old, cutting too much weight, you know, to 145. And it seems like he was angling for a fight against McGregor anyway. I mean, not that he's going to get that anytime soon now, especially after that loss, but I would like to see him at 155. I mean, he still looked really fast. His hands looked really good this past weekend. So maybe at 155, he can revitalize his career and see if he can probably go for another title run at 155.
I was looking this up. Aldo is 5'7". He goes a lightweight. Outside of, you know, guys who aren't ranked or some of the lower ranked guys, he's going to be the shortest guy there by at least 2 or 3 inches. So his success at lightweight, I don't know if it'll come at the same rate that it did for McGregor. McGregor was a big body featherweight. Aldo is big in the body, not height wise. So I would like to see that. I would like to see him at lightweight. At 30 years old, he's mentioned it before. Do you think he should or would retire, or with losing like this and the talk of going to 155, will it motivate him to come back and prove, I need to show you guys why I was the greatest for so long? I had two bumps in the road, but I need to come back and further cement my legacy, because this is not how I want to go out.
Yeah, I don't think Aldo's the type of guy who would want to retire with a loss like that, especially the way he did against Holloway. I don't think he should retire. He still looked really good and really capable at 145. I think, you know, he's always the faster guy at 145, and he showed this past weekend. I think he was faster than Holloway. I think he can probably double down on his speed and probably his leg kicks at 155 and still be maybe not a championship type of guy, but still a perennial top five guy that can really hang in there and probably cement his legacy as an all-time great.
No, without a doubt. And last thing on Aldo, because we got to talk about Max Holloway real quick, because he is the one that won. If he goes to 155, who would you say would be someone that should be his debut? Sometimes, you know, like McGregor, he gets a title shot because he was a champion. Aldo losing, he's obviously not going to get that. There were mentions before about him versus Khabib. Tony Ferguson is looking for a fight. Nate Diaz is still out there. He says McGregor is the only guy he wants to fight. Maybe Aldo will be somebody he's worth fighting. Who is somebody just off the top of your mind, if you could think of, and if you, and if we want to pull up the fighters' rankings to see, that's fine. But who's somebody you could think of that you may want to see Aldo in? Because I got, to me, I got what I think is the perfect opponent for him, regardless of how their next fight goes. I got the perfect opponent for him to fight to make his debut again at lightweight. But who do you think he should face?
I mean, Eddie Alvarez is someone who comes to mind immediately. He's a former champion. You know, he didn't look great against Conor McGregor, but these are two guys who have that opponent in common, and they're both looking, you know, angling to fight McGregor again, probably for the title. So, you know, Eddie Alvarez seems like a top guy. You know, you're basically throwing Aldo's or the Wolves right away. And, that's a fight that I'd like to see happen. I think Aldo would be faster than him. He'd probably a winnable fight for Jose Aldo.
I got another former champion I think it'd be perfect for him. And he's returning to lightweight as well after a short stint at featherweight. Anthony Pettis. Now, Anthony Pettis is taking on Jim Miller. I think it's at 213 or 214. I think it's at 213 here in Vegas. He's taking on Jim Miller. Win or lose is perfect for Anthony Pettis and Aldo to face each other. If he wins, that's good for Pettis. He gets some of his cachet back as far as, hey, this is still showtime. And it will be a credible opponent for Aldo to face in that division. If he loses, two former champions coming off of a loss, why not? They were linked to each other before when Pettis was a champion at 55 and Aldo was a champion. They were supposed to have a super fight, just wouldn't get done. Dana White nixed it. Now, we could talk about why that matchup gets nixed, but when it comes to Conor McGregor, hey, he might fight at heavyweight someday against Brock Lesnar, knowing how it goes. So, yeah. But I think Anthony Pettis would be the perfect matchup for Aldo at lightweight, because it's somebody who is big, but it's not overly big. And it's somebody who, okay, for anybody, whether it's a new division or you're coming into the UFC as a new fighter, I think me and you talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think your first or two should be against guys who more so fit your fighting style at that division. Because in a new division, do you really want to see him take on someone like Khabib, who's just going to ragdoll him, and he really can't get a feel for how physical it is at that division yet, because he's got to do the new weight cutting, carry around bigger weight. You know, you kind of want to get a feel for it. Pettis will stand up with Aldo, which obviously he wants to do. These guys will give us a tremendous war, and it will be mostly a redemption story for both of them. What do you think of a potential Showtime versus Aldo matchup in the future?
Yeah, actually, I haven't thought about it until just now that you mentioned it. And yeah, that fight has fireworks written all over it. I mean, somebody's probably going to get knocked out in that fight. And it's really a test of speed versus speed, and you know, who's got the best kicks at 155. So yeah, Pettis would certainly be a fit for that Aldo debut at 155. I'd like to see that.
Definitely indeed. Now let's get back to the champion real quick, Max Holloway. Max is now on an 11-fight win streak. Very, very impressive. Beating almost a who's who in that division. In a way, and this is kind of weird, most of the time when you become the champion, you got to clear out the division. Holloway's basically has done that outside of, you know, one or two fights. So you would think the potential for a super fight with him or a move up isn't that far away. But who should be his first title defense? Should it be Frankie Edgar, who is 22-5-1, he's on a 2-fight win streak, or should it be Cub Swanson, who's 25-7 on a 4-fight win streak? Edgar has beaten Cub Swanson, but that was back in 2014. Swanson has lost to both Edgar and Holloway in back-to-back matches, again, 2014-2015. Different fighter now. If you're sitting down and you're Sean Shelby, Dana White, who are you giving the first crack at the new champion at? Edgar, Swanson?
I think Edgar makes way too much sense. I mean, this is a guy who's been hanging at 155 and 145 for the last, 10 years or so. And he's only really lost to the, you know, current or former champions. So, you know, I don't think you can deny Frankie Edgar at this point. He seems like a clear number one contender. And, Cub Swanson, he looked amazing against Du Ho Choi, but, you know, that was Du Ho Choi. I'd probably like to see Cub Swanson, you know, he didn't look just spectacular against Artem Lobov either. So, maybe a number one contender fight for Cub Swanson, and then Frankie Edgar, the clear number one choice. And they're talking about, you know, if UFC doesn't go to Hawaii, it would make a lot of sense to have Frankie Edgar fight at Madison Square Garden in November.
Now, that is true, and that's something that we talked about as well. Do you think the UFC can do an event in Hawaii? Because, as we were discussing, they really don't have an indoor facility that would hold a decent enough crowd. I mean, if this is UFC from 2004, it's perfect. But you figure with the travel out there, all the equipment you would need to bring, the state taxes, and just not having a big enough arena for it, because they only got the outdoor stadium, Aloha Stadium, the Blaisdell Arena, the UH men's basketball team, that's what, 2,500 in one place, 5,000 in another. Do you ever think, though, that the UFC would try to figure out a way to get the UFC to do an event in Hawaii? Max Holloway's been calling for it. Do you think it ever happens?
I think the timing is as good as ever. I mean, you have a UFC champion from Hawaii who's a very marketable guy. He's been, you know, tearing through an entire division. And we've seen the UFC do outdoor events before in Abu Dhabi, of all places. So they're willing to, you know, kind of work around, you know, these obstacles. So the time is as good as ever to do a UFC in Hawaii, and why not Aloha Stadium? I think Max Holloway can probably be that guy to sell out a stadium in his own home state.
As the Hawaiian on the show and someone who was stationed in Hawaii for 4 years, I can guarantee you, the UFC says they're coming to Hawaii, it could be at Aloha Stadium, it could be on a dam in the middle of the ocean, it could be on a totally different, it's selling out. And I don't know if it's going to, you know, break a record. Oh, it sold out in 6 minutes. It's going to sell out. That Hawaii, the 808 is such a fight fringe. People just don't understand. Our homeboy David was saying how many fight fans are in Hawaii. The whole damn island.
Yeah.
Okay, grandmas are sitting there saying, get them, choke them. I can't explain it. The warrior mentality out there. Whether you want to say it started with because of BJ Penn, it was before him, but he was a starter. And you're right. Right now, you got the Young Buck and Max Holloway who main evented. The legend BJ Penn, who's active, he could be on the card. Yancy Medeiros, who was on there and had a good showing against Eric Silva, and Luis Smoker, Travis. So many fighters from Hawaii or of Polynesian descent, like Mark Hunt from New Zealand, but he's Samoan. I mean, they can really fill that card. You know, a lot of times when they go to another country, they try to put locals on there. That car can be filled with nothing but Hawaii's, and trust me, it will be jumping. Don't know if I'll be able to go, though. Ticket to Hawaii plus a ticket to the event? Yeah, might just have to watch it on the TV, bruh. real quick, as we wrap up the UFC 212 talk, Claudia Gadelha, she improves to 15-2 with a first-round submission over Carolina, how you say that?
Kovalkiewicz.
Her. Our only two losses have come to the champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. One of them was for a title. How many more fights does Claudia have to win before she could potentially get a second crack at the title and a third fight with Joanna when she's clearly the second best woman in that division? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the only other option is Rose Namajunas. She's still very green. I don't think she can really do much against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. A possibility could be that Joanna just kind of sits back and waits until these two kind of, you know, do a number one contender fight. I mean, I'd still like Gadelha's chances over Rose, but you know, how much longer can you keep denying Claudia Gadelha? I mean, she's clearly the number one contender. She's hung in there with Joanna in two fights. A lot of people thought that she won the first fight by split decision. So you know, that's clearly number one and number two in that division. You know, if it's not Rose Namajunas, it's definitely Claudia Gadelha, and you know, it kind of sucks that we'd have to see a third fight so soon, but there's really not a whole lot going on besides Claudia.
Yeah, see, that's why I said I would have liked to have seen Carolina win this one, because one, it would have gave Claudia more time to establish herself, because even with the loss, she's clearly still one of the best women in the division. Number two, even with the loss. So with that, it will allow Carolina and Joanna to have their rematch in Poland later this year. Gadelha then could easily go on another 2-3 fight win streak in that time, showing, one, her conditioning's gotten better because now she's with the new camp, sparring at Jackson's, training in the States. Her conditioning's gotten better because that's what beat her in the second fight with Joanna. And as you said, we just saw you guys fight last year. Now we won't see you guys fight till 2018, beginning of 2019 maybe. That's enough time to where if Joanna's still the champion to say, hey, this girl's beat everyone else that's come up. Got to give her another shot. So I thought it would have played out better there if that would have went for her. But Gadelha, she got a win. And it was weird because the win she's got over Carolina, like, it was impressive. But it's almost like Carolina just made a mistake and then got caught with the rear naked. And as you and I both know from watching this sport long enough, man, that just goes to show you at this level, you make one mistake, the fight could end so, so quickly going forward from there. For Carolina, you know, we talked about Rose. I believe she is the next one to get a crack at Joanna. For Carolina, who would you try to match her up with going forward here to get her back on track? The Karate Hottie? Do you feed her to that one? Who in the division do you see might be a good matchup for Carolina going forward?
Well, we just saw Joanna and Jacek handle Jessica Andrade. And Jessica, you know, she showed a warrior spirit. And, you know, she showed that she can still hang at that top of that division. So, you know, these two ladies going at it would make a lot of sense. And I'd like to see Carolina kind of, you know, try to answer that grappler question again, because like you talked about, she just gave up her back this past weekend and she did no hand fighting. She really didn't do much to try to get out of that rear naked choke. So maybe, you know, a fight against Andrade, who's a top grappler herself. Maybe she can go in there and show that she can hang with the, you know, some of the best grapplers in the world.
Yeah, European fighters, men or women, that is something that they really do struggle with, is the grappling. I understand that they don't have wrestling out there, at least not to the level that it is here in the States, and jiu-jitsu. Well, hell, you're not going to meet too many people who can outdo a Brazilian in jiu-jitsu, so that's understandable. We'll see what Carolina does going forward. Your favorite fighter, Vitor Belfort. That's right. Unimpressive victory over Nate Marquardt. And who was in his corner? Who was in his corner that you mentioned?
Mr. Farah Zahabi.
Mr. Farah. Oh, sorry. It's just as great. And look, no disrespect to Farah Zahabi, one of the greatest coaches out there, one of the best minds. I will never take that away. He's probably forgotten more about this sport than I could even read on it. And I can't read that damn good. So trust me, yeah, it's going to be a while. But there is a trend with his fighters. They don't take risks. They're more tactical. In some ways, people will say they're boring. They don't go for the kill. Rory McDonald, a.k.a. Boy McSleepy, George St. Pierre, a lot of people criticized going with him. He didn't have that killer instinct anymore. And we saw it in Vitor. You know, we were expecting, hey, in the first round, if Vitor can't finish you, that's it. Now, his conditioning showed that he went three rounds, but we never saw that real explosive Vitor that as soon as he smelled blood in the water, it's a piranha. We didn't see that, good or bad.
I think he looked okay. I mean, he looked very tentative in the first two rounds. And the first two rounds, I thought Nate Marquardt won. I thought Marquardt should have got the decision, but, you know, judges in Brazil, you know, you never know against the phenom. But that aside, Vitor looked kind of tentative. He didn't really look like he was letting his hands go. Not until the third round, and that's when the fight really started taking off. You know, it would have been a nice fourth and fifth round, maybe. I don't know if Vitor could really handle that. And that's what it seemed like it was going on, is that Vitor hadn't been in past the second round in, you know, 5-6 years or so. And maybe that was just new territory for him. So I don't know why Vitor didn't let his hands go a little bit more, because that's those moments were when he looked best in the fight. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not really that impressed with his performance. It would have been a nice story if that would have been his last fight and he goes away with a victory at home. But at the end of the day, it was just another fight and not one that I was really impressed by.
Yeah, he hasn't been past the second round since his fight with John Jones for the light heavyweight championship. So that just showed you how far back it was. Real quick, you were talking about the judges in Brazil. Have you seen the movie Benchwarmers? Rob Schneider, David Spade. Have you seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So you remember in the last game of the season where they were taking on the green and yellow team, and, oh, man, I forget the actor, but the head coach for that team was the brother who was the ladies' man. He played the ladies' man from SNL and Remove. You know who I'm talking about?
No, I do not, sir.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man, I got to pull it up real quick. But when he brings in – pull the – here it goes. Here, hold on. Right here, Tim Meadows, when he played Wayne.
Oh, got it.
So in the last game, he brings in a dirty player. He brings in, how do you say that name for the Spanish guy?
Amari Nolasco.
Okay, he brings him in as Carlos from the Dominican Republic, and because the bench warmers, you know, not to get too far into it, bench warmers, two nerds who are adults getting picked on by Little League baseball teams. Rob Schneider, who, you know, spoiler alert, was a bully himself as a kid, now has turned around as an adult. Now he wants to help out the bench warmers. They do a league, whatever. So Wayne gets Carlos to come in. Carlos got a full beard. He's drinking beer. He's got a kid in the bushes. They like, hey, hey. And then when they go up and they're like, he's not 13. He's got a beard. When they give the umpire, he says, but he's got papers. It's basically a paper in green crayon that says, I am 12 with a $10 bill. And the umpire puts the money in his pocket and says, well, he's got documentation. It's official. Play ball. That's like the judges in Brazil, basically. Like, nope, he's got documentation. He won. So when you said that, that's the first thing that came to mind for that. Vitor says, now, going into, as you said, it would have been nice if this was his last fight. Vitor, going into, kept saying that this was going to be his last fight in the UFC, not in his career. Dana White says, no, he's got one more fight in his career. Again, that Brazilian education coming in. Vitor now says he thinks he's got five more fights in him. Whether that's five in the UFC or five not. One, do you see Vitor having five more fights in him? And two, let's say he's got one more fight in the UFC and his contract is up. Does the UFC re-sign him to finish out his career? Because we know the UFC loves Vitor for some reason. Or would it be better if he went someplace else where maybe we could see the Phenom return? What are your thoughts?
I think the UFC doesn't want to see Vitor go to a Bellator and try to, you know, sell tickets for them. It would make sense if he wants to keep fighting, probably re-sign him and you know, try to give him these manageable fights like the Marquardt fight. I mean, Rashad Evans is still lingering out there. He just made his debut at 185. It would make sense to see him go against Vitor. There's probably fights out there for Vitor in the UFC. Personally, I'd like to see him go to Bellator or Ryzen in Japan and try to get some of those pride fights going again, you know, like a Wanderlei Silva, maybe a Tito, you know. There's fights out there for Vitor that are more interesting outside of the UFC. I think the UFC might want to keep him and you know, if you're going to make money for somebody, it might as well be money for us. He still proved that he can sell tickets in Brazil. So, you know, keep him fighting in Brazil and you know, have him sell tickets for you guys.
No, definitely. He is a true legend in Brazil. Like, you know, we talked about Hawaii, you know, the love for BJ Penn and now Max Holloway. But they love Vitor Belfort beyond. I mean, he's almost as popular as the famed Ronaldo soccer player out there. So they truly do love him out there. But I would love to see him in Bellator. A rematch against Tito, Chuck, and Wanderlei. A matchup possibly against Chael Sonnen. Hell, we might even see him and Rampage fight each other one time. Don't know if that will happen because Rampage looks to be on my kind of a diet, a can't wait to eat diet. But it would be better, I think, to see him at that level. Plus, you never know. Could be taking a Mexican supplement again. And we get the Phenom Vitor Belfort from 2006 back. So it'll be fun. That was 212. Pretty good event. Well, we got to get ready for Fight Night, which we'll get into towards the end of the show. But here's something that's really been circling the airways of MMA news these past couple of days. The UFC offered TJ Dillashaw to Demetrius Johnson. Demetrius Johnson looking for his record 11th. He's got 10 now. He's looking to break Anderson Silva's record for most title defenses with 11. The UFC was willing to offer him TJ Dillashaw after the Cody Garbrandt fight fell through because Garbrandt's back. Dillashaw says he's willing to come down to 125. Mighty Mouse says, no, thank you. I'm going to fight Ray Borg, who I'm supposed to fight. The UFC would rather have the bigger fight with a former champion and TJ. TJ even offered to say, hey, I'll give you my purse if I miss weight. Mighty Mouse says, no. Dana White then threatens to erase the flyweight division. I'll get rid of this division. Demetrius is like, well, get rid of it then. I've been doing everything for the UFC. I've been to all the promotion stuff. I stayed out of trouble. I've given you guys good performances. If you want to treat me like that, then fine. But you're not going to bully me into doing what you want to do. Where do you stand on Dana White and the UFC versus Demetrius Johnson?
I think it's hard not to side with Demetrius Johnson because, I mean, he's been the ultimate company guy for the last several years for the UFC. I mean, he's done absolutely everything they asked for. He's never gotten pay-per-view points, you know, even though he's been the most dominant champion in the UFC. And, you know, now all of a sudden they want to throw in this guy who's never fought in the division. He doesn't know that he can make the weight. And, you know, it's a short-term solution. You know, if TJ Dillashaw were to win the flyweight title, there's no guarantee that he's going to defend that title. He's probably going to go back up and try to face Cody to get the two titles all at once. it's a short-term solution. I can see DJ's point, and you know, I applaud him for basically calling out the UFC's bluff, and I don't think they're going to get rid of an entire division just because, you know, because one fight is not really being made. And is there really that much more money to be made in a TJ versus DJ fight? I don't think so. It's not going to really sell, you know, 100, 200,000 more pay-per-views than a fight against Ray Borg. It's still going to be a record-breaking fight, probably. So, you know, I like DJ standing his ground, and hopefully they'll come to terms with the UFC, and we'll see him fight in August.
No, that's a lot of great points, and it's true. I do agree with DJ not just wanting to allow the UFC to run over him, but I do say this. The UFC is at a point. The flyweight division is in shambles. We talked about the women's featherweight division earlier being in shambles because the champion doesn't want to defend against Cyborg, which we'll get into how that can play out just a little bit later. But the flyweight division doesn't have any stars, none whatsoever. DJ is out the point to where he's almost got to fight no-namers that casual and even hardcore fans aren't familiar with, or he's beaten guys two or three times already. So nobody wants to see that. You got to throw something in there to say, how are we going to jumpstart this division? How do we jumpstart your run? Because as great as you've been, nobody knows. Nobody truly knows outside of when Joe Rogan is doing a promotion talking about how skilled you are. So we're willing to give you a former champion, somebody who a lot of people are familiar with, good or bad. I remember Carolina's training camp even mentioned him being the snake. Oh, the snake TJ. Yeah, the TJ. So, you know, unfortunately, he's got that bad nickname and rep, but this is somebody who even says, I'm willing to fight you. And if you're the champion, you've cleared out the division, why not be willing to take on all comers? You don't want to move up to 135 to fight Dominic Cruz unless the UFC was willing to pay you $2 million. And, you know, people don't understand, you walk around at 134 already. So, okay, got it. But now someone's willing to come into your world, your division, your backyard, and say, I want that belt. And I'm going to take it from you. And you're going to say no. And then you're going to look at it and say, well, am I a true star in the UFC? Do I sell big pay-per-views? No. Now, I'm not saying you got to be Conor McGregor or Chael Sonnen or do the crazy stuff off the field like Jon Jones does. But, hell, you're not even like George St. Pierre, who was the sweetest guy you ever knew, but he sold pay-per-views. Demetrius Johnson is almost in a lose-lose here. Because if he caves in, then it'll be like, well, even if he says he wants to do something, unless he retires, he's not going to hold that stance for long, and he's going to do what we want anyways. If he holds it and UFC does get rid of the division, well, where does that leave him? Does he move up to 135? Does he leave the company? If he's still on the contract, can't fight for another organization. So really, I think the UFC, I think they're kind of in the right here, even though it does seem kind of shady. I think they're kind of in the right. Dude, you're not a big seller. So we kind of need you to go out there and do something that's going to sell this event. Otherwise, dude, your fight against Ray Borg could be like the third fight on a good pay-per-view card.
Well, there's also the fact that DJ's been clamoring about this somewhat quietly, but he's been saying that the UFC just doesn't do enough promotion for his fights. I mean, you know, DJ's known for a guy who likes to play video games online on his Twitch account, and he asked his fans over there, have you guys ever seen a commercial for my fights? And most of the times the answer is no. Maybe the week of the fight, they'll start kind of, you know, hey guys, you know, this is going to be for a record tying performance and this and that, but they really don't put enough promotion behind him. He's, you know, the media is claiming that he's the best pound for pound fighter in the world, but the UFC just doesn't seem to, you know, put that promotional machine behind him. So I think it's just a lot of things that are heating up at Demetrius Johnson. The fact that TJ Dillashaw has never fought at 125, he's never even made the weight. So maybe he just wants to see TJ make the weight once and fight in the division before he gets an immediate title shot. And, you know, it's not like this is a money fight. Like I said, this isn't a fight that's going to sell 100,000 pay-per-views on its own. So I side with Demetrius Johnson in keeping with, you know, going with the next ranked guy at 125 and try to defend that title.
We've never seen Jon Jones fight a heavyweight. If he announces after his win over Daniel Cormier he's going to move it to heavyweight, he gets an immediate title shot against Stipe Miocic.
Only if Jon Jones is a champion at 205. If he's not a champion at 205, then it's like a George St. Pierre situation. I mean, if you've never fought at 185, why are you getting an immediate title shot?
Well, I wouldn't agree with Jon Jones getting an immediate title shot at
at heavyweight if he's not a champion at 205?
Well, that's what I said. If he beats Daniel Cormier, if he then says, well, I've cleaned out the division. Sorry, Jimmy Manuel, just whatever. I beat everyone else. I'm going at the heavyweight. He's getting an immediate title shot.
Yeah, because at that point, you have a super fight. You have a champion versus champion. But TJ Dillashaw's not a champion. He's a former champion at 135, but you're not getting a super fight, you know, a champ-champ fight, if you will.
Out of all the fights in the flyweight division, this is the super fights of all super fights, okay?
It is. I mean, it's a more interesting fight. I'm not trying to say that TJ versus DJ does not interest me at all, because I think that's probably the best opponent that's out there for Demetrius Johnson. The point is, Demetrius Johnson's, you know, he's going by what the UFC has told him his whole career, is that, you know, the 125ers don't sell. So, you know, you're just going to have to do what we say. But I think he's just kind of tired of that, because he's not getting the promotion. He's not getting the money that he's asking for. He's not really asking for much, you know. I mean, if he wants to have a super fight with Dominic Cruz or you know, whoever the champion is at 135, $2 million seems like a bargain, because, I mean, that's one hell of a super fight. But he just seems like he's kind of sick of not getting anything from the UFC, and he's kind of giving them everything that they ask for.
Well, I would imagine the UFC is kind of sick of not getting anything from him as far as numbers go or sales go, because, look, they've given him time and time again headlining pay-per-views, headlining fight night cards. We've tried in every avenue besides putting you on Fight Pass to see if there's a market of fans that will watch you. They don't tune in. So at the end of the day, yeah, it may not seem a lot. Look, I'm all for fighters getting paid more. I'm not disputing that. I wish every fighter could make $1 million per fight. I do. If you are out there fighting and you're not being able to be marketable, now look at Diego Sanchez. He's never been a champion, but fans love to see him fight, win or lose. The Diaz brothers. Nate Diaz hasn't won a fight in 6 years. Fans still want to see him fight for a title today. Right now, if they had a choice, they'll put him against Woodley as opposed to anybody else, or even Michael Bisping. So you got to have a market out there. DJ doesn't have that. And I'm not saying you got to go heel or you got to be, you know, flamboyant with what you're doing or anything like that. But you don't have a fan base that you've been able to tap into and exploit it so that you can show the UFC. There's a market of people out here that want to see me fight. You don't have that. So the UFC is kind of like, dude, even though you're the champion, you're like the lowest ranked champion that we have on here. Joanna's passed you up by a mile right now. So I'm just saying, man, like, nobody really cares about you fighting.
I think the problem is that they're expecting all these fighters to be like the Conor McGregor, you know, where they're fighter slash promoter. Demetrius Johnson's job is to be a fighter and to defend his title and, you know, to train. And, you know, when they ask him to do promotion stuff, he's not the guy to turn it down. I mean, he does anything and everything that they ask for. And by all accounts, media members have been saying that DJ is one of the most approachable fighters. The problem is, they don't put that promotional push behind him. Like I said, I mean, they don't put any commercials for his fights. They never announce that, you know, that he's about to tie or break a record as for UFC title defenses. And, you know, they don't acknowledge him as the best pound for pound fighter. So the fans really don't know him. They haven't really been introduced to Demetrius Johnson. Now, there's also the case, like, yeah, featherweight or flyweight rather is a thin division, and you kind of need two to tango, right? I mean, you need a guy that's going to go out there and kind of, you know, put Demetrius Johnson in either a good light or a bad light. So maybe you kind of need that rivalry to sell a fight. But, you know, I think Demetrius Johnson has done everything that they've asked of him. And as soon as he asks for a little bit something, then, you know, they're not really willing to play ball with him.
Demetrius Johnson is like the actor who comes in a ton of movies, but for some reason you don't remember his character. His character doesn't stand out, and it falls flat. excuse me.
But why? Why is that? I mean, in his last fight, he showed just how amazing he is as a fighter. I mean, he just dominates people in every facet of the game. He's just good. He's good on the ground. His speed is incredible. His hands are great. His kicks are really good. I mean, he's a fight fan's fighter, you know. And for whatever reason, he just doesn't resonate with the people. Maybe it is the fact that he's like a really small guy, and you know, people think, you know, oh, you know, I can probably kick that guy's ass because he's like 5'3" and 125 pounds. When that's not the reality at all. I mean, Demetrius Johnson's really, really an incredible talent. And I think it's up to the UFC to give him that promotional push.
That is true. But as you just said, He's a smaller guy. Look at boxing. Manny Pacquiao started at 112 pounds in boxing. We didn't hear about him until he got to 135, 140. That's when we started recognizing him. Even in boxing, they got weight classes all the way down to, what, 105, I believe. You don't know about those guys, really. Very, very rare that those guys are stars, no matter how good they are. You got to get to a certain size for fans to really get into you and behind you for male fighters. Females, a little bit different. But for male fighters, because as you said, when you look at them, the average guy looks at a 125-pound fighter as if, I'll pick that dude up and throw him. Granted, that's not the case, okay? That's not the case. You take one of these college football offensive linemen, they're not going to do anything to DJ. He'll wrap him up quickly, but it's the perception of it. So when you're watching them, it's like these guys are half the size of the cage that they're in. They almost got to climb the cage just to get to the top of the cage. So it's hard for the UFC to say, well, we need to get behind you and promote you, which, yes, they've done a horrible job up until this point in doing. But you've had 10 fights to build a fight fan base for the title, to build a fight fan base to get behind you. They still haven't got behind you. What the hell are we going to do that's going to get them behind you now?
Do you remember back in the first days of the UFC when Hoyce Gracie was just going in there and dominating everybody? This, you know, 140-pound twig who was just dominating everybody. That was the spirit of martial arts, and that's why people tuned in the first place. I don't buy that, you know, because of his size, he's just not a marketable guy.
Well, that's a little bit different when there's no rules and you literally have him taking on guys who were – remember, he also fought Ken Shamrock, who fought at heavyweight, Dan Severn, who was 240 pounds. So it's a little – it's not like he was in there against guys his own size. He was in there against giants taking him out.
Yeah, and that was absolutely incredible. But the point is, the point of martial arts is it's not really your size. It's all about technique. And – Demetrius Johnson showing some of the best technique in the world. And it's just kind of sad that, you know, the UFC is really not appreciating that from Demetrius Johnson. I think he's done everything that they've asked of him. Just kind of, you know, try to play ball with him a little bit here.
This is the issue with mixed martial art fighters. This is the issue with baseball. And it's the issue in some regards to football. NBA's got it. You got to understand, this isn't just a sport. This isn't just a martial art. This is entertainment. We have – look, at the end of the day, we want you guys to be fighters, and we want you to go out there and show us your best skills. We need to put fans in those seats. We need to have fans buy this stuff because you know how you want to drive around in a nice car, have a nice house, you want to fight in these nice arenas? How do you think we pay for that? Customers. Now, we may have money because of our businesses, but guess how we got money from those businesses? Customers. So at the end of the day, as pure as we want to be, we need to sell. So, again, you don't got to be Conor McGregor. George St. Pierre wasn't Conor McGregor. Anderson Silva wasn't Conor McGregor. Hell, really, John Jones wasn't even Conor McGregor up until most recently. But he hasn't been able to prove if he's still that big star with all the controversy. So, even before that, and before we knew how troubled he was outside of the cage, he was selling. So, you don't have to necessarily be that. Randy Couture, Captain America. Was he a trash talker? Was he somebody that went out there and was all crazy with his vocabulary? No, he didn't put all these rhymes and riddles together, but people wanted to see him fight. Matt Hughes as well. So Demetrius just hasn't been able to lock down a fan base that is strong enough to get behind him. Again, the Diaz brothers. Nick Diaz has not won since 2011. They are still talking about maybe putting him in a title fight or at least George St. Pierre, Anderson Silva, like a marquee matchup. He's not coming back against a mid to bottom of the division guy. No, he's taking on one of the top guys because he sells, because fans will tune in to get in him. And for Nick Diaz, you know, he sounds like these mumble rappers sometimes. When he talks, it's good, but it's very rare and few times where he will. So it's not like he's out there promoting it to the gills every single opportunity. So for Demetrius, I do understand where his stance is, but how can you claim to be the best if you're not willing to take on all challengers? You have one of the best fighters in the lower weight divisions willing to come to your division and even says, dude, if I don't make the weight, have my purse. So let's just say we're both making 200K and you get the winning bonus, you get an extra 200K. You want more money, but you won't want my purse? Come on now, DJ.
I think that's an interesting wrench that TJ threw into this discussion is that, hey, if I miss weight, you know, I'll give you my purse. And this isn't the first time TJ has done that. I mean, he's just clamoring for a title fight at any division at this point. So maybe that changes a little bit as far as DJ's negotiation is going. But like I said, it's not that I'm not interested in the TJ versus DJ fight. It's absolutely an amazing matchup. I'm just wondering whether the UFC can do a little bit more to promote Demetrius Johnson, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, according to just about everybody you ask.
Well, after this long of a run, I don't know what more they can do besides selling us false hope. I mean, not false hope in that he's not good, but, yeah, it'll almost be like, look, we sold all these tickets. Hey, guys, want a ticket? You buy one, you get 20 free. So who knows?
I'll have you know that Demetrius Johnson can sell out an arena, and that's the Pearl at the Palms here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, he can sell. You know what? He can sell out the Blaisdell in Hawaii for that 2,500 seater. Yeah, you're right. He can sell those arenas out perfectly. So the Demetrius Johnson UFC saga will continue. We'll see how it goes. Where you guys stand on it, let us know. You guys can tune into the show every Wednesday between 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Also, if you guys go to Twitter, you can hit us up. Let us know what you guys think and whose side you're on for DJ versus the UFC. Another something else that's been circling the airwaves too. I don't know if you've been privy to it, but former boxing champion and current promoter of Golden Boy Promotions, Oscar De La Hoya, has been slamming the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor possible matchup, saying, "Oh, it's a disrespect to boxing, and it's also disrespect to MMA. If it was in the world of MMA, it's going to be a clown show. This number the circus, yada yada yada." A video surface of just a couple of months ago, De La Hoya was saying if McGregor wanted that, it would only make sense that he fight Canelo, his guy. That, oh, you know, if he wants to do it, the best in MMA take on the best in boxing, that makes sense. But when it's not his guy and it's Mayweather who beat De La Hoya in 07, oh, it's a clown show. It's disrespectful. Fans shouldn't watch this. Is Oscar De La Hoya still salty about losing to Mayweather, or does he have a legit point in this fight shouldn't happen?
I think it's a little bit of sour grapes because, I mean, how are you going to go out there and say, let's promote this fight with McGregor and my boxer, but then you're going to, you know, slam it when it's not your guy? I mean, yeah, we all know that this is all about the money. You know, and there's no real contender there in Conor McGregor as a boxer, especially against the best boxer probably of all time. You know, it's not like McGregor's going to go in there and knock Floyd out. Not likely anyway. So I could somewhat see Oscar De La Hoya's point. I mean, maybe fans are going to be in for a rude awakening after paying maybe $100 for a pay-per-view like we did, you know, a couple of years ago with the Maypac fight. I mean, who doesn't regret that $100 spent? But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a hype game, right? I mean, the press conference is going to be an absolute gangbuster between Mayweather and McGregor, and everybody's going to tune in and watch it anyway. I mean, we all kind of know what to expect a little bit more this time around than the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight anyway. We kind of know what's going to happen, so there really shouldn't be any regrets about buying the fight. I mean, it's all about the hype game anyway. I don't understand why De La Hoya is slamming it. I mean, we all know what we're getting into. Maybe it's a little bit of sour grapes. Maybe he's kind of afraid that they might take his September date for the Canelo versus Triple G fight. So I really don't understand why De La Hoya would want to promote it, and now he's slamming the fight.
Dana White did say that when Canelo and Triple G was announced for September 16th, that was the target date that they were going to have McGregor versus Mayweather. So given Mayweather's history in boxing, he generally fights Cinco de Mayo weekend and the second week of September. So maybe we don't see the fight till May. Maybe they try to do something for the end of the year, or maybe they try to do something for New Year's. We'll see how that goes.
Or maybe they know that Mayweather McGregor is going to sell more than anything, and they're just going to book the same date anyway. It's not like Oscar De La Hoya did not announce a venue for the Triple G versus Canelo fight. So we don't know if it's going to be in Vegas. We don't know if it's going to be in Dallas.
Actually, they just announced yesterday or Monday. It is going to be here in Vegas, right there at the T-Mobile Arena. So it is going to be here in Vegas.
Okay. Well, this is interesting because Mayweather has a contract with the MGM, right? So do you think maybe they would have the event on the same date at the MGM Grand Garden?
No, I don't think that they would because, as you said, as much money as they stand to make, they don't want any competition. I think they're going to try to pick a weekend where there's no big college football games going on. There's not a big – there's obviously, the NFL doesn't play on Saturdays. If it's during the NBA season, they don't want a big NBA matchup. They want as many open fans as possible, not only to sell out but to tune in, because they know this is going to be up there as far as one of the biggest fights market-wise and as far as revenue as possible. So even though, yeah, you're right, just to spite them, I just think they don't want any competition because they want to try to squeeze out as much money as possible from us gullible fans who, as you said, we pretty much know what's going to happen. It's like going to see the Titanic movie. We know what happens, okay? But you never know.
You do never know. I mean, there's always a chance McGregor's going to go in there and, you know, lay out Mayweather with one punch. But my point is not necessarily that, you know, they're going to have the event simultaneously on the same date. My point is, maybe they're going to try to angle, hey, you guys got the T-Mobile Arena? Well, we're going to get the MGM Grand. So let's see, you know, it's kind of like a game of chicken. Let's see who pulls out of their event first. And I think there's a lot more interest and a lot more noise going around the Mayweather-McGregor fight. We've been hearing about this for the last couple of years. So maybe, you know, if Dana White is a ruthless promoter. So if he sees that, you know, Oscar De La Hoya is kind of gunning for a certain date and a certain venue, maybe they would just kind of, you know, butt heads there and try to get De La Hoya to pull his event.
But in order to do that, they'd have to do it on September 16th. And like I said, I don't think they want to do that because they don't want any competition. They want it to be straight up because De La Hoya, you know, he's also a strong-headed guy as well. You know, he's a former fighter, so he's not going to back down. And he also knows Triple G and Canelo, not to the same extent, but it's been talked about for a couple of years. And he knows right now they're both at the peak of their stardom. So he knows that's going to be a big fight. So he's not canceling that unless somebody gets injured. So he'd be like, look, you go over here and put your event on if you want to. We'll see how it goes. And even though the Irish and the Mayweather team are supported, the Hispanics community has shown they will come out in droves and support their own. So I don't think, you know, I get what you're saying. I just don't see Dana White and the UFC doing that because they want to try to market this to get as much possible. And what I think would be better would be that if it is next year, that gives McGregor just that much more time. Look, Mayweather's been fighting his whole life. There's not enough time in the world that McGregor can have. If he trained right now every single day for the next 15 years, pure boxing, it still won't be enough to beat Floyd Mayweather. Well, maybe because he'll be 55, maybe. But there's not enough but I just think, hey, that's just a little bit more time for you to get your conditioning right for 12 rounds, to go out there and just work on what you're trying to do, and it gives us more time to build up the fight once it is announced. So, yeah, I just think it's hypocritical of De La Hoya, who has made this kind of like a trend of his. He criticizes Mayweather for ducking fights in his career, yet he's almost made Canelo duck Triple G for a number of years to take on lesser fights. Oh, we got to build it up as much as possible. So it's not okay for one guy to do something for business, but it's okay for you to do something for business. Flip it. So it's okay for your fighter to do it because you'll be the one making money. But it's not okay for me to do it because I'll be the one making money. I think it's totally hypocritical of De La Hoya. But, hey, it is what it is in that regard. We've been talking about Chris Cyborg on this show for the past couple weeks, and I did read today that her Cyborg versus Invicta featherweight champion Megan Anderson is inching closer to being a done deal for UFC 214. Now, Anderson did get announced for a title defense, for mid-July. Apparently, the UFC, I guess, is going to try to come in and, as you said, kind of play chicken and say, you want to fight Invicta or you want to come out to the UFC? What do you think about Cyborg versus Megan Anderson at 214? Think the UFC should just go ahead and pull the trigger?
Is there any other woman in the universe at 145 who's willing to fight Chris Cyborg?
Hold on, wait. There's there's no, she said no. There's the no, she said no. No.
I mean, there's a woman out there willing to give up a title, willing to give up a championship belt to not fight Cyborg. So Megan Anderson is the only woman in the world who's really calling for this fight. I think, Dana White kind of put himself against the wall by saying, you know, we're guaranteeing that we're going to see Chris Cyborg at UFC 214. We have yet to announce an opponent. So I mean, he really, like I said, he backed himself into a wall. So now he just has to negotiate with Invicta and see if they can get Megan Anderson, the only woman out there who's willing to fight Cyborg. And really, the only fight out there at 145 for the UFC and the I guess, vacant featherweight championship of the world.
Yeah, it seems like that might be the direction that they're going to go in, is not only put this fight on, but strip Jermaine Durandamy of her title and make this for the vacant title. Now, this would be one of those situations, you know, sometimes like with Daniel Cormier or with Jose Aldo, whenever a title is vacated and whoever wins, fans don't generally get behind them as being a true champion. We say, oh, you're the paper champion. You haven't been the champion yet. In this case, I think people are looking at Jermaine Durandamy as the paper champion and saying Cyborg is the real champion because the division was made for her. So if she wins, I don't think fans are going to say, well, she's not the real champion. So no. That's the real champion. And like you said, Megan Anderson is basically the only woman. I know Kat Zingano said it, but from what we heard health-wise, she just won't be able to make it for 214. But Megan Anderson is the only one that's out there that says, yeah, I'll fight her. And people, you know, some might say, oh, well, you know, I don't – look, she's like, look, I'm bigger than her. I'm not afraid. I know how tough she is and how good she is. But just like everyone else, I want to prove that I'm the best. And in order to do that, like Ric Flair said, to beat a man, you got to beat the man. Woo! Me and Anderson's willing to do that on top of an already stacked card. Oh, man. So if this happens, this is going to be tremendous for this fight card. Real quick, as we're wrapping it up here, Alexander Gustafsson blasts John Jones, saying he suspects that he was probably on stuff, Mexican supplements or doing cocaine even when they fought. He doesn't like him as a person, yada, yada, yada. Look, we want to see these guys fight. I want to see actors act. I don't care what Charlie Sheen does in his off time. That's his business. I want to listen to R. Kelly's music. I don't care what he does in his personal life. Granted, don't be doing that to little kids, okay? Don't be doing that to little kids. But I'm just saying, when it comes to fighters, athletes, do we really need to care about their personal lives as long as they're not hurting anybody? I know that's kind of I'm not educated enough to know the word, but I know John Jones in a hit and run, you know, a woman got hurt, but I'm just saying, you know, that's an accident. It's not like he purposely hit her. But as long as the person's not purposely breaking the law or hurting somebody, should we really care about their character and what they do in their personal lives?
I don't really care what John Jones does in his personal life. I mean, as long as he's not really actively, you know, cheating or gaming the system, you know, that's his business. And actually, now that we know who John Jones is as a real person, you know, he's not this fake person that he was, you know, in his early career. He's kind of more endearing. I mean, a lot of people just want to see him back, and you know, we just kind of miss John Jones, and now that he's being himself, we're just kind of glad to see him back. As far as Gus calling him out for his outside the octagon stuff, I mean, good for him for trying to build a fight that, you know, it could happen. I mean, their original fight was probably one of the best in the UFC history. So, yeah, I'd like to see that rematch with Gus and Jones.
Yeah, it was one of the best fights, especially not only in light heavyweight history, but in UFC history as well. Look, outside of him in a hit and run, I could care less what he does in his personal life. He's not hurting anybody. It was an accident. It's not like he was purposely out there trying to do that. But I could care less, especially about your character. That to me, when people bring up character, a lot of times that is very judgmental as far as where you stand on. That just depends on how you view things, because it's very up in the air on that. But hey, man, another episode up. We knocked it out the park, I feel. It was a pretty good one. That debate we had about the UFC versus Mighty Mouse was a good one. I think we're going to be coming back to it. You got anything you want to plug, your social media, where fans can reach you, or anything else you want to talk about maybe for next week?
Yeah, follow me at ShowerLeo on Twitter, and tune in this Saturday for one of the best heavyweight clashes that there is right now. Mark Hunt versus Black Beast Eric Lewis.
You know, hold on. I'm pulling an audible here. I got to add some extra time to the show, because we did not talk about that at all. We did not talk about one of the best heavyweight fights going down. UFC Fight Night going on in New Zealand, Mark Hunt's backyard. Derek the Beast Lewis and Mark Hunt. Derek Lewis on a 6-fight win streak in the UFC heavyweight division. He beats Mark Hunt. Shoe in for title shot next?
Well, there's also Francis Ngannou out there who's he's been kind of running through the division. But how do you not love this fight? I mean, somebody's going down in this fight. You know, Mark Hunt, you know, he didn't look spectacular against Overeem in his last fight, but this is a guy. I mean, his record's like 12-11 or something crazy like that, but he's still one of the scariest guys at the heavyweight division. He's got some of the heaviest hands. He can knock anybody out with basically just touching them. And, you know, Derek Lewis, he's been on an impressive run himself. And these are guys who are just going to stand out there in front of each other and try to knock each other's heads off.
You know, with the heavyweight division, we know that one punch can change the outcome of a fight. These guys can put each other to sleep. Sometimes we get that. Sometimes we don't. And this particular one, like you said, somebody's going to sleep, most likely in that first round. Unless Derek Lewis comes in and tries to maybe get him to the ground, which I doubt, because even against Roy Nelson, another heavy hitter, he was trying to take his head off and almost did with that uppercut. This is going to be a really good fight. Mark Hunt, you know, it's been, you know, he's had such a weird career. Started off really good, beating Wanderlei Silva in a Grand Prix tournament. It was like 4-1. Then he goes on like this five-fight losing streak. Even got knocked out by a middleweight, Melvin Manhoff, which, let's be honest, Melvin Manhoff could probably knock a freaking real-life rhino with the way he hits. Losing to Fedor, Krokov, but Mark Hunt has been there with the who's who in the heavyweight division. And you look at his record, it's not that impressive, but then you got to look. He went on a nice win streak, even in the UFC, knocking guys out. They kind of been trading wins and losses back and forth. He's in that standoff with the UFC right now. Another fighter having a clash of heads with the UFC over the Brock Lesnar scandal. But he's a guy that with one punch, left or right, can really change life. Ask Stefan Struve about that. But Derek Lewis, you know, such an entertaining character, tremendous person, really funny, as you said. Follow him on Instagram. But also a very good fighter, and he's somebody that I feel he's really in tune with who he is as a fighter. I think it was his last performance where he won, and you would think, hey, you just won your sixth fight in a row. You should be calling for the title shot. He was saying he wasn't impressed with it, and he wanted another fight. So to me, this is someone who has a real good idea of where he stands in the division, but after 6 or 7 wins in a row, you got to get a title shot next.
He's kind of a weird guy in the sense that, you know, he's right there knocking on the door for a title shot, but he says, I don't really care for the title. You know, if I'm a champion, that's good. If not, then that's fine too. He's really out there just looking for money. He doesn't really care for fighting either. He's pretty open about that. But I mean, if money is what you're really going after, then a title shot is really where you're going to get it. So why not just, you know, go out and call for it? I would hope that he does that if he beats Mark Hunt this weekend, but he seems like he's calling out Francis Ngannou, and he's calling out everybody but the champion. You know, he's called out Junior Dos Santos here and there, but, you know, Junior's nowhere near a title anymore. So, you know, if you go out there and handle business this coming weekend, then, you know, you got to get yours and try to call for a title shot.
I don't think this is in Derek Lewis, but I often wonder at times when you see a certain fighter, a John Jones, Stipe Miocic right now looks to be on the path of being one of the best heavyweights in UFC history. Cain Velasquez during his heyday, where, yeah, you want to compete, but damn it, you kind of just know that I don't know if I could beat them. Do you think there's any doubt in Derek Lewis's mind that maybe he feels he can't beat Stipe Miocic? Miocic has shown he can wrestle. He's got a pretty good cardio. He's fast. He's got good hands. Very hard to just get a good clean shot off on the dude. You think there's any doubt in his mind to say, I don't know if Stipe Miocic's the guy? Or as you said, he's not even that in love with fighting. So for him, he's just like, whatever.
I think it's a little bit of just whatever attitude from him. But, you know, do I really think Derek Lewis can hang in there against the top two or three guys in the wrestling or grappling department? Not really. I mean, he's shown a few holes in his game. He doesn't knock you out. He's probably going to gas out a little bit. And that's actually kind of what I expect out of Derek Lewis. I'm a huge fan of him, and I really want to see him succeed. But I just kind of see him, you know, not being able to knock out Mark Hunt right away and possibly gassing out in the middle of the fight and then giving a Mark Hunt. Also, I think Mark Hunt's probably a little bit better, you know, clinching up against the cage. And we've seen Derek Lewis not really have too many answers for that. So, you know, I wish, you know, Derek Lewis all the best because he's a lot closer than Mark Hunt is to a title shot. And, you know, if he does win, then go ahead and call out, you know, the best fighter that you can for the biggest money fight. But I just, kind of see Derek Lewis is going to be falling short this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But these are going to be two heavyweights, hard hitters right here. Also, in the co-main event, we got Derek Brunson versus Dan Kelly. Brunson looking to reestablish himself in the middleweight division after what many people felt could have been a robbery against Anderson Silva earlier this year. Dan Kelly, somebody who had an impressive showing against Rashad Evans, welcoming him to the division. How do you see this one playing out between the wrestler Brunson, who has shown to have good stand-up power, against Dan Kelly, who, even though we don't have as much on him, he's shown to be a damn tough fighter.
Yeah, Dan Kelly, I mean, he went in there. He was really on my radar when he beat Antonio Carlos Jr., Shoeface, who we just saw this past weekend. And, yeah, he's been on a 3 or 4 fight winning streak since. But Derek Brunson, I mean, like you said, kind of got robbed against Anderson Silva. I don't know if that fight was in Brazil, by the way.
No, it was in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, okay. Anyway, Derek Brunson's been on a pretty impressive streak, you know, himself, and probably a guy who's knocking at the door for a title shot in the next fight or two. So, I'd like to see what he does against Dan Kelly this weekend, and you know, maybe one or two fights away from a title.
Well, I don't know what Derek Brunson you're talking about. Maybe in the middle of 2016 he was on a nice run, but he's lost two in a row, one to Robert Whittaker. But I get what you're saying. He is a very good fighter. He's been in there with some tough competition. I mean, he's got victories over Lorenz Larkin, Ed Herman, and even Uriah Hall and Chris Leben. So he's been in there with some tough, tough guys. And if you look at who he's lost to in the UFC, I mean, who he's lost to since 2012, Jacare, Yoel Romero, Whittaker, Silva. So not like he's losing his, I mean, the lowest guy on there is Kendall Grove. Again, that was 2012. So it's not like he's just out there just losing. He's losing some of the best in the division. So he turns that around, and like you said, had he won that fight at 208 against Anderson Silva, that would have been the biggest victory in his career. So I look forward to that fight. Also on the card, we got Ross Pearson, Tim Elliott. So this is going to be a pretty good card out there in New Zealand. Lewis and Hunt, though, is obviously the main attraction. Be sure to tune into that. This is going to be on Fox Sports 1. And, again, somebody's going to sleep. Who? We shall see. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Octagon. You guys can listen to us every week, Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Again, Leo, what's your Twitter?
At Shower Leo. And again, welcome to the Blessed Era.
This is the Blessed Era. I'm at KLUA11. That's KLUA11. Also, follow All Things Sports on Facebook. That is All Things Sports. Until next week, everybody, be easy. Peace.